Welcome to GND Spotlight, the podcast where we shine a light on the ever-evolving world of security tech. I'm Jessica Antonacci, marketing for US PayTech, and today we are concluding the special series of live podcast episodes recorded at GND headquarters in Munich, Germany during the Blockchain Thinkers event. We are joined by our moderator, Andreas Barthelmes, investment manager at GND Ventures, and our panelists, Dr. Anna Wolf, economist at IFO Institute for Economic Research, Sagar Bavalia, general partner at Blockchain Founders Capital, and Dr. Daniel Kliha, co-founder at W3MUC and SVP at Innovation Center IABG. Today's topic is titled Beyond the Hype, Blockchain Venture Capital and Market Predictions for 2025. I'll now hand it over to Andreas.
So, high hopes. Most important topic, I'm not sure, but I'm happy to introduce you a bit to the concept of venture capital. We have two VCs here in the round and also two market experts from different areas of the market. So maybe we can warm up a bit with a small introduction from everyone and what brought you into Web3 and why you especially find it interesting. So maybe Daniel, you can start.
Thanks for the already short intro. I'm happy to be here. So I'm heading the Innovation Center at IBG, first and foremost. We do, like we are a company incubator, highly involved in the defense and security domain, I would say, and therefore decentralization, technology in general, plays a role. So this is why looking out what's there, like technology-wise, and how technology can be beneficial for our industry.
Yeah. Anna?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Anna Wolf. I'm working at the IFO Institute in the Department of Innovation New Technologies, and we are dealing with all kind of new technologies and their economic impact, and blockchain is, of course, one of those. And we look at it from the data-driven perspective, so trying to understand how relevant it is for the future markets.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be back here, second time. My name is Sagar Barwalia. I'm one of the founding partners at Blockchain Founders Capital. We are one of the leading Web3, Web 2.5 VC based in Germany. So we do like investment in intersection of Web 2 and Web 3, basically, where you are using the blockchain, but without blockchain, you can serve as a startup. You find the problem, you solve the problem with the use of first principle. We do like 10 to 15 investment per month, standard ticket size, €300,000. As of talking, we have like 20 investment, 60% investment done in US, rest of the 40% is based in Europe. We are always aiming for the obsessed founders, what product they are building. We are also bullish on migrant founders. I mean, I myself is a migrant, came to Germany 13 years back from India. So we have identified that the one of the best trait is the being a migrant. It could be also German in US or the French guy in Germany. We are basically focusing on like early stage, pre-seed, seed. If you are building out there, you can also reach out to me. And the last note, we have identified the most of the trades in Web3 is basically we stay away from the token angle. So we do like pure equity deals. We don't want to just jump into this casino ride of like a token pump and dump. So we are doing from day one like Web2 Web5 approach where you raise the first check as in pre-seed or seed money and then you build and try to solve the problem and find the product market fit.
Thank you. Maybe for the audience, just a quick reminder on venture capital. It's a way of minority financing. So you're taking a small share in an early stage company and trying to help the company build up the company until there is an exit, as we call it. So an M&A where someone buys the company or an IPO where the company gets publicly listed. Jumping into the topic, so Web3 actually saw a strong rebound in 2024. So there was 20 billion invested across 3,500 deals. Why is that? So in 2022 there was a strong dip. So what have been the drivers of this strong rebound of the Web3 funding landscape?
Sure. I would like to also add on last quarter, basically Q1, where funding went down to $2 billion, I think $2 to $3 billion in like all-time low, basically in last 5 years. So I think in 2022, we had like several factors, like people are working from home, unlimited stimulus checks coming, consumer spending went down because you are just staying at home and you try to maximize your time by doing your own like day-to-day job. And on top of that, you spend most of the time on Netflix. But people, of course, they tend to align towards this whole speculation or gambling, you know, and unlimited money was coming and people started gambling and so does the funds, of course. So you mentioned about venture capital. So venture capital, they basically raise the money from HNIs or successful founders. They pull their own money and they also raise from the external capital and funds of funds. And then they divide into like, let's say if your fund is 15 million euro and you chip in $300,000 ticket size, then you can invest in 35 to 40 startups. 2022, where lots of people were just like, there was like a zero interest rate environment and there was no any fundamental reasons that this market keep going. So just there is like a law of science, the basic fundamentals that everything going up, it can come down also at a much more faster than it went up. So during that time, like as an LP, I would call my fund manager like, hey, why are you not deploying the capital? Because everyone was missing out on that ride. And fast forward, the Fed started hiking the interest rate with the 25 basis point. They went to 50 basis point. Now we have like all-time high interest rate, like around 3 to 4%. Then the money supply went down. Of course, then the liquidity, you need to bootstrap the liquidity. And suddenly after 20 years or 15 years later, the money suddenly become much more expensive. Back in days, you get like 0% interest rate or even the negative interest rate to invest in business, right? So even you don't take a risk, you don't need to pay the interest. So at the end of the day, even if you get from the business your principal money back, you're still on the safe side, right? And suddenly in 2022, with the inflation and everything, the price started going up and central banks started raising the interest rates. Of course, then you need to be very careful. Like same with the retail people's like a bank account, right? When there is unlimited money supply, you're going to spend so much money. And then you're going to go to the street and you start buying everything, whatever is available. And sometime there is a bargaining power is going up. Like, so for example, if Andreas wants to buy the shoes at $50, if I have unlimited money supply, I will say like, hey, I want to buy at 60. Then the gentleman comes and it's like, Daniel says like, I want to pay $70. That's exactly what happened. And it's just inflated the whole money market, private equity market, and so does the venture capital market. And then now we're just rebounding back to basis where, okay, this is the real actual value of the money and you need to spend it wisely where you have to pay like 4% interest rate. Mm. So the banks are not giving you money for free. And so does like most of the founders who raised based on the hype or speculation, they didn't live up to the hype. Like they come to us and like, hey, I'm building the next generation of Amazon. And then here you go, 200,000 euro, right? You build it. And these founders just disappear in 6 months. And that's what happened. If you look at the most of the investment happened in 2022, they didn't see the light well. And so it is like in Web3, you can look at like Metaverse, NFTs. There's so many crap, other stuff were like coming into like buzzing. And if you look at fast forward 3 years, there is, you don't see anything out of even like 10% is like around. And Metaverse is also completely disappeared. I'm not saying it will not come back, but it's like basically sometime you try to chase the hype and it doesn't live up to the hype.
If you're looking into the use cases, maybe away from the very hype venture topics. Daniel, you're working a lot in aerospace and defense. Maybe you can segment a few Web3 related use cases that you see and what is maybe most interesting in that segment.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the question. I mean, the narrative nowadays is a bit different. So my driver for blockchain, for decentralized systems is resilience and robustness of systems, which inherently stays within decentralization. And this is a topic for autonomous systems in general. So not only for the defense industry, I would say, but also for space, for mobility, like the classical civil mobility topic. But I want to come back to your question before. Like in the industry, I see two streams at the moment. So the foundations are looking for industry projects. There is where money flows in, comes in slightly slow, but it comes because they are interested seeing use cases, real world use cases of the industry to scale their, to have traction transactions on the chain. So this is one topic. And to be honest, we still struggle to find use cases where we really say, okay, this is purely blockchain. Yeah. cannot be solved with any classical technology here. But there are some, I would say. And the other thing, what I see, and this brings me back to autonomous systems, to autonomy, to like in the space, constellations that are out there, different orbits, satellites that need to communicate with each other, Earth observation satellites, doing reconnaissance imagery for then defense, for also civil systems, drones, etc. pp. There you have some money flow. Yeah, speaking of money flow, there you have some funding programs which are quite interesting from ESA, for example, European Space Agency. Also, Horizon Europe. There are some interesting calls and tenders where I clearly see that they are looking for decentralized DLT stuff and blockchain technologies. So we are on that. I would say the challenge here for industry again is to really figure out the clear reason why blockchain. In addition with the stretch that at IBG we don't have the developers. Kind of, so we need to collaborate, which is good. Again, so the ecosystem ansatz here, we work together a lot, I would say, in this field, with startups, with non-traditional players.
Okay.
Yeah, which is needed for the defense industry and defense innovation in general. So,
Anna, you're working a lot with the data itself that is generated on blockchains, and you're trying to analyze. Running a data-driven approach to identify use cases. What are you currently seeing in the industry that is adopted, so to say, that is emerging maybe? What fascinates you the most in terms of use cases?
Yes, I'm coming from a data-driven approach to this topic, and which means we try to project what we are observing today on tomorrow. Because everything what was happening in the past, even 5 years ago, even 2 years ago, even half a year ago, actually is not relevant. We are moving so fast. The geopolitical environment is changing so fast. So, and there is a dilemma because we have lots of data on public blockchains, real-time transactions, but we know very little about, and everyone said like data is scarce still. We know really little about what's happening on national scale. So we have, of course, our business surveys where we see that 5% of companies and industry and construction are already using blockchain. It's not little. It's every 20th company in the market. 35% seriously thinking about use cases and are really open to blockchain technology. So to get a clearer insight of what's really happening on a national scale, we also look into job postings. And job postings are really a gold mine of information because they are public. We can see who is hiring. We can see what projects they are working on and what skills do they look for. So one can zoom into companies, into nations, into countries, into even cities. So here we have real-time data of what's going on in this space, in blockchain space. And what we see, of course, a lot of job postings in the financial sector, but it's only one third of this. And the majority is outside the financial sector in industry. And particularly a lot are like IT engineers at the intersection of blockchain, Internet of Things, and robotic process automation. So we see that industries are really starting to build or thinking about building applications at the cross-section of this technology. So I think what we see in the past cycle, we have seen a lot of investment going into consumer-facing applications like wallets and marketplaces and generally to get more people into crypto markets. And it was an important groundwork. And I think that now the whole space is shifting towards industry, towards using like intersection of financial sector and industry and into solving this really old complex problems of how businesses operate and move money. So I think this is our insight.
If every one of us takes one topic and explains it for like 20 seconds or so, what is interesting this year or in the coming 1 to 2 years, I would pick the intersection of AI and Web3. So thesis behind this, Web3 is not really suitable to be an interface like the internet, I would say, but Web3 is really suitable to build a trust layer as a backbone of an internet kind of thing that users can use. And it can really serve well this agentic future that we see with Gen AI. So this intersection of AI and Web3 is very interesting for me. What about you, if you pick a topic quickly?
I think I would pick it a bit of different, where people are talking about Web3, where I think in 5 to 10 years, people will not use the term Web3. Like back in days, people are using the internet, right? You're building internet company. Nowadays, no one talks about it. So I would pick it up as in AI. Blockchain isn't just a backend of the tech. And I would like to use the one terminology. As I come from India, we have like amazing food, right? And I'm sure you guys like the Indian food. So in India, there is a saying like you have the fresh coriander and you can put that coriander as a garnishing into every dish. So that coriander is an AI. You can implement AI into every business case. It depends on how much garnishing you want to use it. And that will also add on top, you can use the blockchain also as in garnishing. You don't need to implement forcefully into the every business cases, but it will make sense where it makes sense, you know? And also like nowadays, no one talks about internet companies. Nowadays, no one talks about high-speed highways, right? It's just highways. And same way, in 5 to 10 years, people will not use Web3 or AI. They will just say like, okay, it is one of the backend supporting tech, where it solves the problem 10x faster and cheaper and solves the people's problem. And last but not least is tech can solve the 99% of the world's problem than the any other part. So I think long term, you can only stay bullish on tech. It doesn't matter what's happening in short term macro or macro economics. Yeah.
Anna, what about you?
Yeah, I'm definitely picking up stable coins. And it's not just because they are like hot this year, but it's and it's not about that they enable faster transactions. It's about what they it's part of it, but they enable further things, and it's programmability, automation, and real-time cross-industry, cross-country transaction. And I think those stable coins or CBDC or any kind, any other kind of programmable money will be the glue that will connect in the future industry, financial sector, and will push the whole process innovation forward.
Last but not least, Daniel, what is your...
No, I had too much time to think about that after you already took the best ones. So for me, personal digital ownership, I think is one huge general topic I would wish for, and maybe coming with that, and also back to this new world of satellites gathering data and bringing this data to decentralized marketplaces, where then you can do things on that infrastructure. This is where. Where I see some potential, with the risk of going back from the centralized agencies and organizations to the shift into the decentralized world.
Having said that, I would open up for Q&A. So if there are questions, ideas, thoughts, please let us know.
So my name is Hermann Gump from InnoByte GmbH. I'm working a lot of with blockchain analysis, also in the field of cybercrime, and we work with law enforcement, and I see the blockchain and cryptocurrencies mostly as an enabler for ransomware and for criminal activities. Also, as mentioned before, the topic of having an append-only database, where you are not unable to remove data, brings up for me the questions why people are not looking more into things like block graph, where not only linear commits, but also parallel commits are allowed. And for example, this is like in a Git-like system. So have you looked into this kind of parallel commit systems already? Or do you think that blockchain will be able to solve these kind of issues?
Okay, I will take it. So we should put it that like the fiat is the worst transaction mode of like making the money laundering, ransomware, and doing all the illicit activities. The bad thing about blockchain is that blockchain never forgets. So if I give you 10 euro shine or 50 euro shine, if nobody knows that, then it's the transaction is done. There is no transaction database, you know? So you have to see the blockchain as in a database system, right? So once you make the transaction on blockchain, it stays there forever. Your 10th or 20th generation can also see that. So I think I would not agree with everyone saying like blockchain or crypto is using for ransomware, illicit activities. I think we all are mature enough to see the what happened before the blockchain came into the space and what you can do the things about like with the using the fiat currencies. Now coming back to the, your main analytical tools, like, so we have like Chainalysis, we have a Score Chain, which is European Chainalysis, and Elliptics and Merkle Science from Singapore. There are like so many amazing young founders are building out there for forensics. And if you look at that 1.5 billion Bybit hack last week or like 2 weeks back, within one day, there were like a bunch of analytics tools and analysts has gave the 5-page, 10-page of reports that would have never be possible in the normal world where you have done the transaction in fiat currency, either euro, Indian rupees or dollar or any currency. So it's just a matter of time. And I think sometime most of the people, I mean, what is the scarcity is the time, right? Once you listen on like podcast or you do it on newspaper or you do it on X or whatever somebody, your colleague is telling you, and then people are like in ghetto, you know, like we don't have enough time to do our own research. That's why in blockchain people use it, DYOR, do your own research, and which we don't do it. So I think I would disagree on the that part on ransomware, but I think there are like amazing tool available in the space that can solve your transaction easily, and it can solve your problem, and it can show you like where the money moving from A to Z, and you cannot hide it for a long time.
I'm also asking myself if it's a technological problem here or if it's a technological and regulatory slash market problem. So if you're looking into the fiat world, there's a lot of regulation ongoing in irrespectively of the technology underlying. So there's a lot happening in the European Union, in my opinion, in terms of anti-money laundering directive, MiCA, travel rule, and so on. This can solve parts of the problem. So it's not always about fixing the technology behind the problem, but it's sometimes also about how you implement the use case, what kind of use case you're offering, and so on. Yeah, it's not always a technological problem, in my opinion.
So I need to frame my question first. I go to a lot of wealth management meetups and family office meetups here in Germany, and a lot of them don't allocate any money currently in Europe, and mostly in Asia or in on the US. And one discussion we had was why that is, and my argument was that that is because in Europe we don't have any good VC ecosystem, and the startup ecosystem is kind of bad and underrepresented in the general world. We had A16Z opening up an office in London and closing it after not even 12 months again, and not really much money is getting deployed here. Why is that, and what can we do to change that?
I think I love the question most, and I was waiting for this opportunity to answer it, but thank you so much for asking that question. So you have to understand the ecosystem, right? The A16Z has lots of money because somebody would have given them money, right? So endowment funds, pension fund, university funds pouring into the A16Z, Sequoia, Founders Fund, and others. I am fundraising for last 3 years, guys. It's a 15 million euro fund. And as a VC, we put our small capital into the fund, and then the rest of the fund come from the HNI's founders. Most of the successful founders I talk in Germany, they all want to become angel investor. I mean, like, guys, you can do the angel investment, but the money has to come from one source, right? So that there is no supply of the money. Most of the founders, they're successful. They're doing their, rather than building and focusing on their startup, they just want to become angel investment. So that's the one question, one challenge. Second one, I talked to like most of the funds of fund. So we are into the capitalist market, right? Just forget about for a minute that we live in Germany and we have like a normal structure, right? Where everyone lives the equal lifestyle. So if you want to make more money, your goal should be like giving it to the right people and how they can make money on top of your every dollar you give it to them. What happens when I go to funds of funds, most of the banks, they're looking for sustainability, they're looking for diversity. It's like, if you want to make more money, I agree with all these kind of things, it's important. But when you have your money, your hard-earned money, you want to give to other person to create the more returns, right? You're not doing the charity. The second thing, that's the thing that where most of the funds are not investing into the young funds. And the third one is like venture capital is not well aware in our ecosystem space, where my fund is 15 million euro, we are halfway. And I just stopped doing fundraising for last 1 year in German market. I left it to my colleagues. And now I'm like covering between Dubai, Middle East, Singapore, and US to find the money, guys. So forget about like A116Z. A116 is like $10 billion fund. I have to close 15 million euro fund and there's no money coming. So if I'm doing my next fund, $30 million next year, but it's going to take us so much time. So family office like you, gentlemen, you should start pouring money into early fund managers. And I tell you why venture capital investment is the best idea than the angel investment, because there are the fund managers who are just doing this thing every day. From morning to evening, their job is to look for the best founders, analyzing the good deal flow. And our job is basically like how much content we consume every day. Morning to evening is just like talking to the founders. We are just analyzing. And if you are an HNI or if you're building your startup or if you're already successful startup founders, if you want to invest in angel investment, then you invest what, $200,000, $300,000 ticket size in one startup. If it's a moonshot, you make money. Otherwise, 99% chance your $300,000 goes to the zero. Other than that, if it's a German fund, the BaFin says minimum ticket size should be 200,000 euro, right? So you invest that $200,000, not in my fund, any early stage fund, you wait the fund managers and then you invest into them. That will give you into handsomely 20 to 30 startup deals allocation. Let's say like $10,000 into like 20 startups, $5,000 into 40 startups. That 40 startup will make proper portfolio diversification and you don't need to do even the work. Let these managers do their work. And after 5 or 10 years later, one thing, you end up making money or not. But also, and second thing, 10 years down the road, out of 40 startup, one or two startup make the outlier returns. In your social status, you can also say like proudly, oh, I was early investor in what, Flash and Post. I was early investor in N26. Or I was early investor in Uber, that most of the people are cashing out, that kind of thing. So I think we need to start actively talking about venture capital amongst the family offices, HNIs, and they should be more educated. And then we will have like a $50, $100 million fund. And I think Sequoia, just let's not dream about it in next 5 years that we have like Sequoia kind of fund in Europe. But I think I'm still young, so I think we can say like, let's say 20 years down the road, we can make it, but it's not going to happen possible with a single-handed. It's like whole German ecosystem from government top to bottom in all ecosystem in hierarchy, like everyone should start investing in venture capital fund. Yeah.
May I quickly add on that? Quickly.
Very quickly.
So if you want to understand how the German people work and maybe also the Europeans, look at the procurement processes which are out there. And there you find a lot of people with the German angst and a zero risk mentality. And this is like you find it in Europe.
Maybe to round up the discussion from my perspective, we don't have a supply problem. So we have very good talent in Europe. We have very good early stage companies also in crypto in Europe, in general in the venture capital world. But I see it, Europe just has more capital to deploy and is maybe also more risk-taking in that approach. And I personally believe that also good companies and good talent is attracting capital from wherever it comes. So if there is a good company in Europe, you will also have money from the US. In the end, we should think global and not, okay, this is Europe, this is US, this is Asia, and we only as US investors, we're looking at US. But good US investors will come to Europe if we have good companies in Europe. And we are building that. We have good universities. We just have to be a bit more risk-taking in our approach, I would say. So we need maybe a better sales nature, personally, from founder perspective. But tech-wise, talent-wise, and so, we can definitely compete with Europe, with the US, in my opinion. And time will tell if also the capital can be matched somehow. But I truly believe that we have to take this as a global Web3 funding ecosystem and not divide it into Europe, US, Asia, Australia, Africa, and so on.
Subscribe now so you never miss an episode. We can't wait to share these exciting conversations with you.